This is Talking to America. I'm your host, Aaron Zellin. Our subject today is Living with Terrorism, Survival Lessons from the Streets of Jerusalem. Our guest is Howard Linette. He is an Israeli Police Civil Guard instructor, an author, and an attorney. Hello, Howard. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me on your program.
You're welcome. Why did you decide to write a book about living with terrorism?
Yeah. I'm a born and bred Connecticut Yankee. About half my adult life has been spent in the United States getting myself educated and working. The other half's been spent living in Jerusalem, Israel, where I've a husband, raised a family, work, and I'm a volunteer Israeli police officer. With my background of dual experience, I realized how little Americans really know about terrorism. Unless you're recently returned home from a six-month combat tour of duty in Iraq, you really don't have any idea what can happen. You don't have a frame of reference. From personally living with the constant, horrific, random violence daily for the past many years of Palestinian Intifada, it became clear to me that the experience needed by someone who's confronted with active terrorism cannot be gained from watching 30-second sound bites on CNN or Fox News. I thought the best way that I could fight the terrorists was to prepare Americans for what they might have to face. And my book is my attempt to pass along what I've learned in practice.
Okay, the name of your book again is?
Living with Terrorism, Survival Lessons from the Streets of Jerusalem. And it's available from Paladin Press. They're the publishers. The easiest thing to do is just go to their website, www.paladinpress.com, and you can find it there and order it.
Okay, well, at this point, people are going to wonder, sounds like a great book, but what experience do you really possess, and have you and your family actually been in harm's way?
Yeah, well, our family lives in northern Jerusalem, surrounded 300 degrees by unfriendly neighbors. We're actually on the direct route taken by most of the terrorists from their safe haven and staging ground in Ramallah to downtown Jerusalem. Attacks in and around our home have been so close we have heard and sometimes even felt the bomb blasts, watched the rising columns of smoke, and ducked for cover at the sound of gunfire. The only way my family has in and out of our neighborhood is through the French Hill Bridge traffic intersection. And that location and immediate vicinity has been the scene of over 30 terrorist attacks during the past 5 years. Three, perhaps four of those attacks occurred after we'd just driven through the intersection. Three times my family's been one traffic light or one block away from where bombs have been detonated in downtown Jerusalem. Sniper shot at one family member. My wife was 2 feet away from a car bomb when its detonator went off. Fortunately, it failed to set off the main charge. She only got covered with glass. Once the school bus bringing my younger daughter home was next in line, waiting for its turn to enter the French Hill interchange, when a terrorist shot up a bus already in the intersection. Another time at that same interchange, a homicide-suicide bomber attacked the bus one ahead of my same daughter's school bus. As a volunteer police officer and sniper, I've been on close to 100 operations and been present for hundreds of briefings. As a sniper instructor, I've researched in depth all manner of terrorist attacks, including especially terrorist sniper training and tactics. I've had medicine ball-sized boulders hurled onto the moving police vehicles in which I've been riding. I've been shot at several times. I've been at the scene of so many attacks within minutes of the bombs or shootings being carried out, I don't even bother to take photographs anymore. That's as a journalist. And as a target, twice I've been confronted with terrorists springing roadblock ambushes on me. So we have our share of experience here.
Geez, you ought to find some time to do something exciting. Within your book, You mentioned something I thought was very amazing. Defending yourself and your family, your mind is your primary means of defense. Can you elaborate on that?
I'd be happy to. You need to be able to see a potential threat and recognize it for what it is in order to defend yourself against it before it's too late. Aware and alert are your two primary survival states of mind. You need to be aware of your surroundings and alert to the signs that something's starting to happen. Your senses need to register, and your mind needs to analyze. Okay? I believe there are three critical mental skills you need to master to enhance your awareness and alertness. And I call these situational awareness, visualization, and flying ahead of the aircraft. Situational awareness is your knowing what's going on around you. It is you constantly paying attention to your surroundings and using all of your senses to keep yourself continually updated. That way, you're not easily surprised, and you have the vital presence of mind to act quickly. You know how and to what extent you can react if you need to. And I'll give you an example. It's very simple. You're driving in the rain. The road's slippery. You approach an intersection with a traffic light. As you do, you're scanning back, left, and right. You see there's no pedestrians, no traffic coming. Suddenly, the traffic light changes from green to yellow. Because you've been periodically glancing in your rearview mirror, you know a large truck's come up on you from behind, too fast for road conditions. You also know that the truck's too close. So you continue through the intersection running the red light rather than being rear-ended. This is an example where situational awareness just saved your butt. Okay? Visualization is picturing a situation in your mind's eye and working through it mentally, trying out different responses, and then practicing those responses again mentally. I'm speaking now pure psychology, scientifically recognized mental exercise. Visualization is actually an acknowledged technique employed in hypnosis and psychotherapy. Next to a real baptism under fire, actually being there, this technique is the best thing you can do to develop critical, instinctive reactions that will take over from your rational thought process if you are in a real attack. Equally important, it allows you to accomplish the last mental feat, what I call flying ahead of the aircraft. It's a concept I was taught by the airline pilots for whom I worked years ago. This is simply anticipating and preparing in advance that which you're going to need to do. You know, flying a jet aircraft, that plane flies really fast. The pilot's got to be thinking ahead of where the aircraft actually is, doing everything well in advance of the aircraft reaching the point where and when a task has to be accomplished. Because if you start when you have to do it, you're already past that point by the time it's done. Okay? You practice flying ahead of the aircraft every day without even realizing it. For instance, you use your turn signal on the car before turning, or you pull into the far right lane before you reach the exit you need to take. That simple.
You're listening to Talkin' to America with our guest, Howard Lynette. Here once again is your host, Aaron Zellman.
A lot of people don't really understand the mental makeup of a terrorist. You read the American papers, and they always have apologies for these, the homicidal maniacs. So maybe you could give us some insight based on your experience on what makes a terrorist tick, no pun intended.
First of all, they crave the spotlight. Achieving live broadcast coverage of their attack on every international TV news network is a terrorist's hottest erotic dream. Okay? And they know that the more horrific the carnage they can inflict, the greater the number of dead, of bodies, and of body parts for the foreign press to put on TV screens worldwide, the greater is going to be their media exposure. You got to know the specific terrorists involved in actually carrying out an attack know they're going to their death. They've already made their choice, and they want passage into heaven and their 70 virgins. They're diabolical and totally lacking in remorse. Surprise is an essential element in each attack they carry out. And the problem is that too often, surprise is not difficult for them to achieve because the targets they attack are simply beyond our ability to conceive of as targets, even of the most barbaric of savages. Now, the organizational structure of the terrorist cell is a marvel of division of labor. These are not stupid people, okay? They have operations planners, intelligence collectors, arms and munitions procurers. They have tailors of explosive garments, bomb makers, fashion consultants, costumers, recruiters, drivers, handlers, their own communications professionals, and of course, their fundraisers. A terrorist specialist is going to handle every aspect of an attack from its inception to its execution. I'll give you one or two examples. The intelligence the terrorist gatherers will collect is going to be used to select their target, the route to take to the target, and how to get the terrorist attackers and their guns and explosives to the target. It's going to tell them when to commence the attack, the day of the week and the time of that day, when the target's going to be most packed with innocents. If they're going to be guards or security, the intelligence collected will give the numbers of security guards, their routes, shift change times, what specific guards are on duty, when, and how those specific guards interact with the public. And terrorist fashion consultants and costumers know the latest styles and determine, based on the location about to be attacked, what's the most appropriate dress and grooming for the attackers. And they're going to provide the clothes and the disguises the attackers will wear and prepare every aspect of their appearance for them. Okay. Many of the attackers in Israel are disguised as ultra-Orthodox Jewish males, and these individuals wear long black coat. Others are costumed in police, border police, and IDF uniforms, especially when the attack's going to be one carried out with military weapons. Okay? EMTs, ambulance crews, and other first responding personnel are, by standing order, our sniper unit's primary focus whenever any of us happen to be on duty at the location where an attack's just taken place. They wear costumes. Okay? The terrorist tailor is going to design and fashion garments for holding between 12 and 30 pounds of explosive, detonator, wire, and shrapnel. Each garment, when worn by its homicide-suicide intent owner, is undetectable even to trained, watchful eyes. There have been belts and vests. There's even underwear. Each garment is fitted out with multiple detonation switches and triggers, and wireless remote detonation using cellular telephone triggers is very common. Last, the drivers and the handlers, they don't just deliver the attackers to their jump-off point. They actually walk the attack team through several rehearsals of the attack they're about to undertake, even a full dress rehearsal, at the very site itself about to be attacked. A run-through may even be designed specifically to cause interaction between the terrorists who are going to comprise the attack group and the security personnel they'll later have to defeat. Just last week, there was a picture of the three guys who blew themselves up in the underground in London the day before. They printed a picture of them showing they were doing their run-through. Incredible.
Frightening. Well, what type of attacks might people expect?
Expect attacks employing firearms. Expect attacks employing explosives. And expect attacks employing both the second being used for a follow-up, a second wave-type attack at the location where the first attack has taken place. Soon after, rescue efforts are underway, and a crowd of onlookers has gathered. Now, they're shootings that are carried out by terrorists who are on foot, where the terrorists intend to escape. These attacks take place close to terrorist-friendly areas. The attacks include every tactic from firing blindly from afar in the general direction of a targeted area to standing along major highways or at major intersections and firing at traffic and pedestrians that are going by, to firing from hillsides at passing people and vehicles. And also in this category, I place sniper attacks. Next are shootings carried out where escape is optional, and this is because the attacks take place at locations often far removed from quick and assured escape. Okay, these are carried out at neighborhood bus stops, downtown, against storefront-style restaurants and reception halls, and at transportation centers, central bus stations. Okay. Lastly is the attack where escape's not even contemplated. These attacks are truly the work of homicide-suicide attackers, and they're carried out at major intersections, Main Street at high noon, anywhere a terrorist can appear with a military-style weapon and begin shooting and continue shooting simply until he or she's out of ammunition or killed. And these attackers must be treated as if they're wearing explosive garments, because they very may well be. Shootings are also carried out from vehicles, both stationary vehicles and moving vehicles, against stationary vehicles and moving targets. There are also roadblock ambushes. These ambushes I name for the objects used to block the oncoming vehicle's path. There's the whatever's at hand roadblock, which in the States could be just felling a tree across the road. And you have stationary and moving vehicle roadblocks, where vehicles are used as the barrier to block the road. Last, we come to bombings. And bombing techniques include everything from carrying the bomb in and leaving it to later be exploded by a timer or by remote control cell phone, to some homicide-suicide bomber wearing the bomb and detonating it on his own decision. Okay. Bombs are not only concealed in packages and on people, they're concealed by the roadside. Sometimes they're buried in the road. Bombs are hidden on animals, so you have a four-legged delivery system, and they're hidden in vehicles. You've got a four-wheeled delivery system. Bomb attacks take place against stationary targets. They take place against moving targets.
You're listening to Talkin' to America with our guest, Howard Lynette. Here once again is your host, Aaron Zellman.
What do you recommend to people if they're caught in an attack? Just what should they do? How should they react?
I give you the same instructions that our family's standing instructions. We'll begin, if there's a shooting, immediately stop and drop. Lay flat on the ground. Determine if there are bullets flying. If there are, figure out where the shooters are. Stay low, even crawl to a better protected place. If you can do so without exposing yourself to the shooters and drawing their fire. If you're caught, exposed in the open, and moving will draw the terrorist fire, lay still and play dead. Terrorists do not generally waste ammunition shooting people they think are already dead. Okay? Remember, it's critical. Terrorists work in pairs, sometimes trios. Okay? They want to drive you into the ambush. So just because the terrorist is killed doesn't mean it's all clear. Do not move until you are told to do so by security personnel. You are sure are real police not terrorists in disguise, then move away quickly in the direction the police instruct. There remains grave danger, and call home ASAP. Now, let's look at bombings. When a bomb detonates, the sound is deafening. An enormous shockwave sends out a crushing concussion. Windows shatter, sending glass in all directions. There's fire and a rising column of smoke. You literally feel the ground shake. Then there's an eerie period of seemingly long seconds of silence before the screams and the sirens start. Again, our family standing instructions in a bombing, if you're close but not in the immediate area, stop. Immediately call home and then leave the area. Now, if you are in the immediate area of the explosion, stop and drop. If you can, do so away from store windows or other large sheets of glass that can shatter and become instant shrapnel when the second or even the third bomb is detonated. The bombers work 2-3 bombs at a time. Okay? Cover your loved ones with your body. Cover your head with whatever you may have with you, your handbag, your briefcase, your backpack. It's not going to stop shrapnel, metal shrapnel, from another bomb, but it will stop flying glass. Okay? Remain covered up until the first responders arrive. Okay? If you only have yourself to look after and you're sure you're not injured, try to shake off the shock of the blast and of the hellish scene in which you find yourself. Decide whether to remain in your drop, duck, and cover position or to move and use your basic first aid skills to try and save the lives of the wounded who, if not given immediate attention, will not survive until the EMTs arrive. Shirts make life-saving tourniquets and pressure bandages under these crisis circumstances. If you have ringing in your ears or you felt the concussion of the blast, you are wounded. You may also have more visible harm. There is no way you can tell the extent of your injuries. Remain lying still, your head covered as best you can. Do not move. Be patient. The EMTs will arrive and get to you. They will examine and then transport you to an area hospital. Have them contact your family and let a family member know which emergency room you're being taken to.
What advice do you have for armed individuals who find themselves in the midst of a shooting?
This also comes from being one of the people up above with a sniper rifle. If you find yourself in an attack, never, never, ever draw your handgun unless either you or other innocents will die if you do not shoot a terrorist attacker. Understand, please, the minute police see that you have a firearm, you are in imminent mortal danger of being mistaken for a terrorist, and there's a high probability that you're going to be shot dead.
In America here, everybody visualizes Israelis walking around with Uzis and M16s and whatever, but is that really the way it is?
Actually, nothing could be farther from the truth. Surprisingly, the second law passed by Israel's fledgling parliament back in 1949 was confiscation of all firearms, ammunition, and explosives. Since then, possession of a firearm results in a 7-year jail sentence unless you have a government-issued permit. Self-defense is not a reason for the government to issue you a permit for a firearm unless you live somewhere that the government's decided is dangerous. Jerusalem, except for a few streets, is not considered a dangerous place. You can't get a firearm permit. Okay? The government even maintains central records of all individuals' visits to mental health professionals so that they have an easy check on one's stability. That's someone who might be applying for a firearms permit. Okay? It's an absolutely insane situation. The Ministry of the Interior, the government agency that licensed civilian gun ownership, is against civilian ownership of firearms, while the country's top law enforcement officials repeatedly ask all licensed gun owners to carry 24/7, admitting that the police can't be everywhere all the time.
You know, Howard, there's an old saying about we Jews are our own worst enemies. It sounds like a good example of this situation in practice. Any last advice for listeners concerning this whole situation about surviving terrorism?
Yes. All family members should carry a cellular telephone and never leave home without it. You have to call home within the first 2 minutes of a terrorist attack. That's before the cell phone networks crash. Okay. Knowing a loved one was in the area where an attack has happened and not hearing from them that they're okay is a nightmare you don't want to have.
Well said. Howard, can you give us the name of your book again and where people can order it?
My book is Living with Terrorism, Survival Lessons from the Streets of Jerusalem. It's available from Paladin Press, and their website is www.paladin-press.com.
Very good. Howard, thank you for being with us today. This has been Talking to America. Our guest, Howard Linette. I've been your host, Aaron Zellman. And remember, if you won't defend your rights, don't complain when you lose them.
Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of JPFO.org or its members. Talking to America is a production of JPFO.org.